Hey guys, I'm giving a speech to the Libertarian Party in Rhode Island on October the 27th, and then November the 3rd with Ron Paul and Lou Rockwell and a bunch of others down there in Lake Jackson. Jeff Deist and all that Mises Institute are having me out to give a talk about media stuff, and that's November the 3rd down there in Lake Jackson. If you like Ron Paul events and you're nearby, I'll see you there.
Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, on the line, it's the great Gareth Porter. Gareth Porter the Great. And here he is writing at Consortium News, the shaky case that Russia manipulated social media to tip the 2016 election. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Scott. I'm fine. Glad to be back on your show, as always.
Yeah, very happy to have you here. You know, it's interesting. Seems like there are a lot of, well, I don't know a lot, but quite a few, some kind of vague number terminology thing, of people who are kind of liberal, progressive, leftists of some stripe or another, but who are not so partisan and not so loyal to the Democratic sort of the Democratic Party way of looking at things necessarily, who really just don't believe in this Trump Russia stuff. And it's obviously a very trendy thing to believe in on the American political left right now. And but so it's always interesting to me when you have people who, at least from the most obvious, you know, basic point of view, are arguing against interest. Here you are arguing against a case against a right wing Republican president who we all know that you must detest for any variety of reasons that might take the rest of the show for you to enumerate. And yet, when it comes to the worst accusation against him, you go, meh, this isn't right. And when the New York Times does their best to you know, first of all, accuse the Russians and then, you know, insinuate that Donald Trump probably, you know, is guilty and working with them to do something or other by way of his people, you just pour cold water all over it here at ConsortiumNews.com.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things going on here. I mean, the first thing, of course, is that the case itself is so transparently weak and so clearly motivated by the self-interest of the national security bureaucracy, a.k.a. the deep state, if you will, that it's difficult for anybody who has any integrity politically or intellectually to go along with it. And so I think that's the main point. But beyond that, this is also, I think, what you're seeing is a fallout from a longer term development in American politics, which is that it's not just, the populism of the right or whatever you want to call them, who supported Trump during the 2016 election that represents a falling away from the major parties. I mean, the Democratic Party clearly is riven very deeply by people who are sick and tired of the elite that has dominated it for well over two decades. And, the credibility of the people who were pushing this line, whose interests were on the were at stake in the putting out this story about Russia threatening to tip the election to Trump, those people have grown substantially over the last several years, the last few years particularly. And so I think, you're seeing potentially here the basis for a left-right coalition in opposition to the political elites that have run the country in both parties for so many decades.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like maybe a big part of what's going on here too is for the people who are genuinely interested in this kind of thing, and again, are not particularly partisan or invested in any particular set of politicians or party leaders or what have you, but they have been paying attention for, you know, a few years in a row. Well, then they remember a lot of times that America did very provocative things to the Russians that put the Russians, you know, on their back heel and then forced a reaction. So, you know, it was George Kennan, the center, right? The grayest of gray beards who said expanding NATO is going to cause some serious problems. And then when the Russians react, you're going to blame them and say that's the reason for NATO. But NATO's the reason for the crisis. And I'm telling you now, that's exactly how it's going to happen. And that's exactly how it did. And so that's kind of a big part of this whole scam, is that the Russians have started a new Cold War with us. When anybody who really is interested in this stuff and ain't in on, you know, team blue or red knows better than that.
Yeah, in fact, you know, what surprises me more than anything else about this whole, the way this issue has shaped up in general, is not so much that there's a lot of people who have been doubtful about the credibility of the hysteria about a Russian threat to American democracy, but that so many people who should know better have fallen for it. I think that's really the shocking thing here.
Yeah, seriously. All right. Well, so now let's talk about this New York Times piece. Actually, I already interviewed Joe Lurie about it, and I was kind of kicking myself because I didn't have a chance to really review the piece right before I talked to him, only a couple days before, whatever it was. And so I wasn't sure if I really contributed to that interview and set him up to make the best case that he made even. And so today I did have a chance to do that. And I reviewed all of it except the part that you really focus on in your article, which is the accusations about the social media messaging. And of course, all beginning with the presumption, which I don't know if you want to tackle this part or not to start. Really here, if you want to get to the details with that. Oh, yeah, no, definitely Russia, quote unquote, that is the Russian central government, had a mission to do this and used the cutout of this, you know, this private internet agency, internet research agency, it's called, in order to successfully manipulate American minds with Facebook and Twitter messages and so forth here.
Yeah, I think we should start with that premise, definitely. And, you know, looking back on it, I think if I had to do it over again, I would have put much more emphasis on the questionable nature of that premise itself. I did certainly suggest by implication and perhaps by a very short remark at the end that there's reason to doubt that the Russians really tried very hard to do this. But I think the emphasis in my piece was certainly on just how feeble the effort was and how far it was from having any conceivably significant effect on the actual outcome. But I do think that the more I've thought about it, the more I see a very strong reason for doubt that there was a firm policy decision on the part of the Kremlin to try to alter the result of this election in favor of Trump, certainly through the messaging on Facebook and Twitter. I just think that to begin with, you know, there is just not sufficient evidence that the Internet Research Agency was in fact setting out to carry out a political mission on behalf of Putin to help Trump. There are so many reasons to doubt that. And you know, one could have written a very different piece looking at the much broader political aspect of this, and that's not the direction I went. I decided to really focus in on the numbers and just how misleading those numbers are. But look, I mean, the Internet Research Agency is in fact a privately owned and it's a profit-making organization. It's aimed at profit, And there's a lot of evidence, which I could have gone into but didn't, to show that that could have been the underlying reason for all of these Facebook posts and Twitter feeds or Twitter accounts.
Well, I mean, just on that point, it's not like there was obviously this huge consistent effort to promote Trump and destroy Hillary. And even, you know, it's been remarked upon by just about everybody, including in the mainstream media. More than half, is that right? But a great proportion, at least, of these posts had nothing to do with politics at all, or were very obscure and nonpartisan, or even were posted long after the election was over.
Absolutely right. Yeah. In terms of all of the detailed data that we have available from Facebook and Twitter both, it's clear that relatively little, quite a small percentage. And in the case of Twitter, it was definitely less than 10% of the total content that was put out by the IRA, as I call it in the piece, was in fact election related. So that casts a different light on the whole issue, I think, if you look at it from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Hey, real quick, the best ways to donate to the show are patreon.com. $5 a month will get you keys to the Reddit group. $1 per interview will get you 2 free audiobooks from Listen and Think Audio. And then if you want to donate at scotthorton.org/donate, anybody who donates $50 gets a signed book, and $100 will get you a QR code silver commodity disc or a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks at listenandthink.com. And yes, I take all your digital currencies and all that too. So there you go. Find out all about that at scotthorton.org/donate and patreon.com/scotthortonshow. All right, now, so there are a lot of problems with that article, and I want to talk about them with you, but let's start with, let's go through your piece here and your debunking on this particular point. I mean, it really, they just take the most expansive interpretation of any number that's ever been cited as to who's been influenced by these Facebook ads, et cetera, correct?
Right. I mean, and in fact, they do so in a way that is so sensationalist that it's really quite outrageous. I mean, I don't know if I conveyed that adequately in the way I wrote it, but certainly that was my intention to make it clear that the way they talked about the 126 million Americans who were reached on Facebook by the IRA through 80,000 posts, and then took that 126 million and related it to the 137 million people who voted in the election, obviously leaving the strong impression that they must have really had a dominant effect on this election campaign in terms of their ability to reach so many people. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you then begin to break down what the actual meaning of the 126 million people is, the whole thing falls apart very quickly.
Yeah. Well, okay, so one argument in favor of their interpretation, which even they say, well, geez, you know, we're not saying it made the difference because there's no way to really know that. Well, yeah, that's true. On the other hand, it was a pretty close margin and one of those rare occasions where the popular vote and the Electoral College were at odds there. And so, you know, on the face of it, it sounds like, wow, with that razor thin of a margin, in that situation, maybe just a little nudge would have been all it took. But again, it's not falsifiable anyway.
Let me comment on that, because I think it's an important point, certainly. I think they had a very clever rhetorical sort of stance that they used in this piece, which is, as you said, it can't be disproven whether they tipped the balance. Obviously, leaving again the impression that this was very close and it could have been, it might not have been, but it might have been. And in fact, you know, it wasn't anywhere close to that kind of an effect, as we'll sort of break down in the context of all these different numbers. But I think the other point.
But you're talking about what, in just in the sense of the Electoral College? that he just creamed her by however many points there?
What I was going to say is that you made the point that the victory was very small, a small margin in key states, and that's true. And at the same time, if you think about it, there's no evidence, and they presented no evidence that the IRA targeted their Facebook or Twitter output in such a way as to focus on those most sensitive parts of the electorate. And in fact, there's every reason to believe that they did no such thing, because if they had, I think we would have read about it. Believe me, if somebody would have found out, Twitter and or Facebook would have said something about it, and that would have been big news. And all the evidence indicates the opposite. There was no targeting at all. And in fact, one of the interesting points that I make in the piece is that there was more content. At this moment, I think it was Twitter. The majority of the content or more of the content came out after the election rather than before. So there was much more effort made, after the election was finished than there was during the election. So, I mean, that's one of several reasons to seriously doubt and I would say to rule out practically the idea that that there was, in fact, an effort to target things in a way that would have, made a difference in the election. It would have to have done that in order to make a difference in the election. And I'll make it clearer why I say that as we get to the specifics of what these numbers actually mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, before we do that, just one more thing, which is, I guess I don't know if there are numbers about this or not, but it sure seems like people were so polarized in this election that everybody knew who they opposed more. And, there were fan bases for both. I guess Trump had a bigger fan base than Hillary. There are a lot of people who certainly opposed him more than they opposed her, and vice versa. But opinions seem pretty made up. I would say that, just guessing, it would seem like there would be a lot more swing voters that would even be up for grabs compared to, say, Bush Kerry or Bush Gore or something like that, where you could flip a coin over these guys.
That seems like a fair statement to make, yeah. But I'm not sure in fact, I don't believe that would make a stronger case for the idea that the IRA was either intentionally or had the effect of influencing those people in between at all. I mean, in other words, that would have required, targeting those people who were non-committed, uncommitted in mm-hmm. the key states or in not just in the states, but in the districts where those people were clustered. Yeah. And again, there's no reason to think that that's what happened.
Yeah. All right. So get further into these numbers here between the most expansive definitions that the, Democratic hawks in Congress and the New York Times use here.
Well, first of all, the big headline number, which was the 126 million compared to 137 million people who voted, is not the number of people who actually allegedly read or saw anything on Facebook that was issued by or content that came out of the IRA. In fact, as Facebook itself, the general counsel of Facebook, Colin Stretch, has testified before Congress, what they were doing was giving a number to their best estimate of how many people were, quote, served, unquote. Now, what that means is that theoretically, at some point, and bear in mind, this is not during the election campaign. When we're talking about Facebook, the numbers have to do with essentially a year and a half period beginning in early 2015, or I think it's February or March 2015, and going through 2017. So, this is a theoretical number of the number of people who might have had at least one piece of information from IRA in their Twitter feed at some point during that 17 or 16.
Wait, Facebook or Twitter?
Talking about Facebook. Did okay. I say Twitter?
You Facebook. Said Twitter. Go ahead.
Facebook, sorry. Facebook is what I mean. So at some point, they might have gotten at least one piece of information that was in their Twitter feed during that period.
During a two-year period that even includes the time after the election, too, or all just previous?
Absolutely, yes. It's a large part of it was after the election, yes.
So including time after the election. So yeah. I guess not that well, but okay, that argues the other way, that for something a little bit less than 2 years, sometime within that time frame before the election, someone had saw a Facebook post, maybe.
Well, yeah, that it was theoretically possible for them to see it. But one of the points that I make in my piece, which I must say I was kind of happy to come across as a researcher, was the admission by a Facebook official in a post quite separate from the electoral issue, from the election issue, that only 1 in 10 of the Facebook feed articles or posts is actually seen by anybody who is a subscriber to or a member of Facebook. In other words, you know, if you get, let's say, 20 or 25 Facebook feeds, what's the right term, posts in your Facebook feed, your news feed, then on average, you might see two or three possibly. So, you know, if you get 10, then you might see one. And if you get less than 10, it's possible on average that you don't see any of that content at all. I mean, you might miss it completely. You might see it only on alternative days or once a week or something like that. So the reality is much less exciting than the way it might appear from that figure of 126 million.
Yeah. And how much influence are we really supposed to think that any one post has over the way people think about these things? You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Gee, ever since I saw a cartoon of Bernie Sanders with big muscles, that now has me beginning to question Hillary Clinton and her political experience, you know?
Well, first of all, of course, the 126 million is a figure that is a theoretical figure derived from an assumption about how often people will have shared a post if they saw it, and they use the figure of 29 million as the basis for that. Now, that 29 million is still a theoretical figure as far as I'm concerned. I think that they that's the number of people that they think could have actually seen it, but they can't say that in fact that many saw it. Now you have to break that down further and say what proportion of the 80,000 posts that are at stake here. Mm-hmm. Remember, 80,000 posts that theoretically are said to have come from the IRA during this entire, let's call it, 2 year, 1.5 to 2 year period, and the answer is that, you know, we don't know what percentage of that 80,000 is actually election related. It could be very small, probably less than 10% was election related. So,
at least at first, so much of it was anti-Trump stuff that they tried to not go so far as to accuse them of trying to help Trump. They said, well, they're just trying to undermine our democracy and be disruptive and make us lose faith and all these kinds of platitudes, because there was just as much propaganda going the other way.
Right. And that was true of Twitter, of course, as well. That was the same thing.
We'll get to Twitter in a second, but go ahead. Yeah.
But anyway, again, we don't have that information, but it's fair to assume that only a small proportion of the 80,000 posts were actually electoral related. And again, remember that the majority of these were posts that were put on the internet in the news feed by IRA in a period other than the electoral the campaign itself, from September 1st through November 7th. So you begin to see a much, much different picture here if you really break it down that way. And what I really want
One more thing before you really want to is the larger context too. You say all this would, it, even if you take them at their highest estimates, you're talking about 0.4 of the total content of Facebook feeds over this time. So some of these numbers, I don't know, 80,000 sounds like a big number, but yeah, no, it's not. That's nothing compared to the deluge of, you know, quality and nonsense and kittens and God knows what going through your Facebook feed every day.
Absolutely. And that's really kind of the punchline of this. But Scott, I want to make an important announcement on your show. And that is that, in fact, I have, since I published this piece, I have gone further into the testimony before Congress by Facebook. And there's a figure that I missed in my research before I wrote the piece and before it was published, that was mentioned by Colin Stretch, the general counsel, of Facebook in his testimony. And the actual figure of the total content that Facebook put on the internet in the news feeds of all of the subscribers to Facebook, members of Facebook, 210 million roughly at that point, was, prepare yourself for this, well over, these are his own quoted words, well over 33 trillion. Let me repeat that one more time. Well over 33 trillion pieces of newsfeed that were put on the internet to the 210 million. Now that is supposed to be the entire, all of the people who subscribe to news feeds from Facebook during the period.
So you're saying, relatively speaking, this is like one Hillary tier compared to the Atlantic Ocean.
Exactly. That's almost precisely the way I have pictured it in my own mind. It's like a thimble full of water in the ocean. Exactly.
Yeah, good times. All right. Well, very persuasive. I feel so persuaded. Did Putin send you? Wait. Okay, let's talk about Twitter now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This one is not so spectacular in terms of the numbers. It's about 3,814 Twitter accounts that Twitter says in their testimony were believed to be associated or were said to be associated with the IRA. And these 3,814 Twitter accounts interacted with 1.4 million Americans. That's what Shane and Mazzetti quote from Twitter, and they are correct in reporting that that's what Twitter actually said, that these Twitter accounts, 3,814, interacted with 1.4 million Americans. But again, there are catches here. When you begin to ask the question, okay, how much of this was election related? Well, it turns out that only 15,000 of the tweets that were issued by the IRA during the election campaign, 15,000 were in any way election related. That's a tiny percent of the total tweets in the election, of course. I mean, the total tweets in the election were just an enormous number.
It says here 189 million tweets, and so that makes 0.08 of the estimated total.
That's right. And so in fact, this was, again, it's not as tiny in relation to the total feed of, into the network of users, as in the case of Facebook, but it's pretty damn tiny, and clearly too small to have had an effect on the election. So I think Twitter does not really make a case, and Shane and Mazzetti, the New York Times correspondents, do not make a case that there's anything about these numbers that really should change the picture that was we've already talked about in the case of Facebook. So that leaves really the most interesting, from my point of view, the most interesting part of the story, which is the idea that there was another mysterious 50,000 accounts that Twitter decided in their research that they identified these 50,000 accounts with Russia somehow, that they were, quote, associated with Russia, or as they put it, quote, Russia linked, unquote. And that these 50,000 accounts generated 2.1 million tweets during the election campaign. And that is supposedly, again, a substantial amount which they worry might have made a difference, in the results. So that's a challenge which I decided to take up and look more deeply into this. And what I found was two things, basically. First of all, what Twitter did was to use an extremely, as they put it themselves, an extremely expansive definition of what they would consider to be a Russia linked or associated with Russia. And by the way, they never say at any point that this means that there is a suspicion that it's the Russian government behind it. They may imply that, but they never say it. And they don't do that because they don't have any evidence to support it.
Yeah, I mean, and this is huge. I mean, they do this constantly, smuggling the KGB into, well, a Russian, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Or better, a Russian address, according to the assertion of some guy who says that that's what the computer says.
Yes, and unfortunately, this has become the coin of the realm in terms of media coverage of this whole, you know, Russia hysteria, the Russiagate hysteria. Yeah, I remember very well, and I've written about this. I'm sure you probably recall that I wrote a piece, a critique of media coverage like CNN, New York Times, but particularly CNN, and the way they suggest, imply that any contact between someone linked to Trump during the campaign is evidence of somehow, suspicious relationship between the Trump campaign and the Russian government.
Right.
When there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever to support.
Well, which brings me to my next question, which is, do you want to keep going about the rest of what's wrong with this article, or you want to leave it with your great article here where you take on this major part of it?
Well, the only other point that I want to make, I think I've made my point about the definition.
Yeah.
The definitional problem. But the other point is really equally or more important, and that is that if you look carefully at the data that Twitter itself has put out in their official testimony, what you find is that that these accounts generated about 1% of total election-related tweets, and a little over half of those were from automated accounts. Now, one of the things that I learned in my research is that, and Scott Shane was the source of this in a piece that he wrote more than a year ago now, that there is a major market for Twitter and Facebook accounts that are no longer in use, sold by the tens and hundreds of thousands online. And that a big part of this market is located, it's based in Russia. Now, that obviously raises the probability, not just the possibility, but the probability that the political campaigns on both sides, in fact, used Facebook accounts that were purchased on the international market in part in Russia. And that would account for the fact that many of the accounts that are regarded as Russia-linked, were in fact accounts that were purchased by the Republicans and Democrats or people working for them, automated accounts that they then used to generate tweets on behalf of their candidate. And what we find is that Hillary Clinton got 0.62% of her likes and 0.55% of her retweets from among the automated accounts that were included among the Russia-linked accounts. Now, that suggests that that's roughly the same proportion of those accounts to all of the accounts that were tweeting on the election. So I think you have a case here that, in fact, and by the way, I should add that the Trump campaign got even more out of it. They got the figures were like 3.62%, and forgotten what the other one was, but they did much more on the automated accounts coming from Russia. But both campaigns were clearly using automated accounts that had been purchased from Russia.
Which I guess only proves that Putin lost control of his plot for a minute there and he started working for Hillary. She's very crafty and manipulated him into it, I guess. Sorry, that wasn't really funny. Hey, you guys, if you're good libertarians, go ahead and submit articles to the Libertarian Institute. Maybe I'll run them. You can find out all the submission guidelines there at libertarianinstitute.org. So I did quit Twitter, not because they banned me for a week, but because I've been trying to quit anyway. I've got a lot of book reading done, and now I'm writing another one here. And so I'm glad to be done with that. But I am still on Reddit, but it's a private Reddit group. Tom Woods convinced me to do it. He wanted me to do Facebook, but it's on Reddit. Anybody who donates more than $5 a month by way of PayPal or Patreon.com/Scott Horton Show or whatever you want, send a check. You get access to the private Reddit group at r/Scott Horton Show. And we got about 90 something people in there now, and it's a good little group. And so I spend some time in there if you want to check that out. Hey, so do you want to talk about some of the rest of what's wrong with this horrible article, or you got to go?
You mean in general, the non-electoral part of Facebook and Twitter part?
Yeah. And I know we've talked about some of this before, but not this particular article.
Well, ask me a question. We'll see.
All right. Well, it seems like, sort of like you were saying, in this article, it sort of goes that any contact here is all part of one big onslaught, one big policy. All of it traces back to Putin. And they go on and on about his personal animus and what they know about how he feels, what time of day, and all this stuff. It's kind of crazy. But then it really seems, and this is, I guess, the most important part of it, right? Is that like, yeah, but Papadopoulos was nobody, and nobody ever really gave him anything at all. He got some text messages, and nothing ever happened. And Carter Page never got his $19 billion for some oil company thing because that wasn't true. It was just made up. And Paul Manafort, yeah, he knew some Russians, but he was serving America's interest as a counselor to the government in Kiev. And Jeff Sessions, yeah, he saw Kislyak twice. Once in his Senate office, where he's surrounded by retired Army officers who are his staff, who probably didn't observe an act of high treason and go along with it. I mean, unless somebody has some evidence of that. And then another time he met him at a speech or a function, whatever, shook his hand for a second. You know, Mike Flynn said, please veto the Israel resolution for us. Ask them for a favor, not received instructions from them. And they turned his favor down. So there's his collusion with Russia there. And so it's all just like Saddam's human shredder and his mobile biological weapons labs ad infinitum. None of it is true. There's a lot of accusations, but it really doesn't add up to much unless you start with your conclusion that, of course, it all does.
Yeah, and you know, I guess you've got the details of this down, and you can recite them very well, perhaps better than I could. And what I would just add to that litany of obviously exaggerated or completely false connections made to a plot, connected with Putin, is that this whole business of that was generated by the intelligence community beginning in 2016 is a toxic combination of a bureaucratic self-interest relating to the obvious desire to fire up a new Cold War with Russia. That's a topic that I intend to write much more about in the future, and so I have a very deep interest in that. And, of course, the partisan interest in making sure that Trump was not going to be legitimate. And I think I've said on your show before that one of the most interesting quotes from this whole story is Clapper, long after the election, making a statement on in an interview with I've forgotten whether it was CNN.
Wait, now remind us, Clapper was the director of national intelligence, the boss over CIA, NSA, and the rest of them back when this happened, correct?
Was former DNI, director of national intelligence under Obama. And he made the statement in an interview that that our statement, our intelligence assessment, essentially made Trump's election illegitimate. We made him an illegitimate president. And that, to my mind, is an extremely telling quote. Very honest, as well as indicating the degree to which the intelligence community was indulging in a political act in their January 6th intelligence assessment, which I criticized at the time, relatively soon after that, as a really quite outrageous intelligence move that went well beyond professionalism on the part of Clapper in particular and the rest of the leaders. So I think that that there is a record here that speaks of just massive self-interest, self-dealing, if you will, by people in the intelligence community that really is going to require a lot of historical revisionism in the future.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what. All right, thanks, Gareth Porter. Appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
All right, you guys, that's Gareth the Great. Check out his book, Manufactured Crisis, The Truth Behind the Iran Nuclear Scare, and Perils of Dominance about Vietnam. Before that, he's written 10 million articles. You can find him at antiwar.com, at truthout.org, at truthdig, and at Consortium News, which is where you'll find this one here. The shaky case that Russia manipulated social media to tip the 2016 election. All right, y'all, thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org, at scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/scotthortonshow. Oh, yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan, at foolserrand.us.